Jesus is walking with a crowd of people teaching them, and suddenly he's interrupted. Now, we have all been interrupted, haven't we? We're sitting down at the dinner table, and suddenly, ring. Well, I know, I guess today it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Guess what they do today now, but I'm used to the old-fashioned ring-ling-ling-ling-ling. Pick up the phone, wait for a few seconds. Hello, we can tell you how to reduce your debt and get out of debt quickly. Now, I got to tell you what I do when I get those. I push the button to talk to a human, and I interrupt them. Hello? Are you interested in lowering your debt? Yeah, I have a question for you, sir. How is your sin debt with God? Are you saved? Hey, if they can interrupt my life with their sales pitch, I can interrupt their life with mine. This is, after all, a free country. Goes both ways. So I preach to telemarketers, witness to them. I've actually led a number of them to the Sabbath, because if they say they're saved, next thing I'll say is, well, what day do you go to church on? Sunday. We know most people don't know this, but actually the Bible says the seventh day. Yeah, okay, you see where we go from there. Well, Jesus was interrupted by a ministry opportunity as well. Master, son of David, have mercy on me. The crowd, of course, didn't want to be interrupted. They just wanted to sit and listen to Jesus telling you how to love one another. Well, that's what most of his preaching was on, loving one another. So whether or not that's what he was speaking on, I kind of think it would have been something there like that. So the man calls out louder. Now, I have some experience with this. Being blind, I've had to learn to get people's attention. See, I'm sitting in the back of a classroom. It's the end of class. Now, I know that there's no way I'm going to get to the back of the back of the line in time before the professor leaves and for me to start the next class on time. So I have to call out, hey, Professor Smith, I have a question. Hey, I need to see you for a minute, please. I have to learn to make my voice carry. My voice can project. If I didn't have a mic, you in the back of the room would hear me just fine. Well, Bartimaeus had to learn this skill too. So he calls out again, Master, have mercy on me. At that point, Jesus says, all right, crowd, this man needs my attention. Let's spend some time with him. Now, this is where we get the first letter in the acronym for share. The S is slow down. Something I need to do when I preach, I know. But we all need to slow down. Any disability messes up the way the body works. And everything needs to work together so well that when one part is down, it slows everything down. And so if one sense is damaged, it will slow the whole body down. And so one example of this is potluck. Right? My wife used to work as a waitress. If anybody can move food around quickly, it's Sally. So when somebody's rushing her through potluck, getting food, you know they don't know what they're talking about. Then come on, hurry it up. Well, Sally has often her mother who's disabled and me and herself to get food for. You know, she'd like to eat too. Another time is bagging groceries at the grocery stores, at stores where they have me do it. It takes me a little bit longer. My thing is, if you complain about it, you can help me bag. That's just kind of how it works. It takes me a little longer. Braille is a slow code for reading. After all you're doing is looking at one letter at a time. You're not able to just skim through the page. So people reading Braille need a little bit of extra time to read it. Slow down. We're so busy in this fast-paced society. Everything is interrupted. Everything has to be done 5 minutes early, and we overbook ourselves. I wonder if God designed us to need to stop and eat so that we'd have to slow down once in a while. And, of course, the greatest slowdown is, remember, the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. That's the greatest slowdown. And Jesus slowed down, and he has more things to do than you can imagine, and he takes time to slow down for each of us. So I think we can follow him and do likewise. S is slow down. Okay, H, Jesus heard. H is hear, H-E-A-R. Of course, if you're really going to listen to somebody, you have to be here, H-E-R-E, with them. So I guess you could take it however you want to spell it. Jesus heard Bartimaeus. We know that because the first thing Jesus did is ask, what do you want me to do? Now, we look at that question and say, oh, wouldn't Jesus know? Obviously, the guy wants to see. Yeah. The disabled, though, have a struggle in society. We're often pushed around, made to conform to other people's schedules, especially the elderly. They tell you when to get up, when to go to bed, when to take your pill, when to eat, what to eat, how to eat it, how fast to eat it, what to wear when you're eating it. You don't get to make any decisions for yourself when you're disabled often. Jesus knew that what Bartimaeus needed, even more than his sight, was the respect and dignity given to a creation of God. Jesus asked him. I can tell you a story, and this is where we start the humor stories. I was walking back from church at PUC. Suddenly, this guy throws his arms around me. Now, bear in mind, we're just an hour north of San Francisco. I'm asking, excuse me, what are you doing? He's like, I'm helping you across the street. Yeah, but I'm not going across the street. You want to ask first. It really helps save you a lot of embarrassment. How would you feel if you were in the grocery store and someone just started throwing things in your cart they thought you needed? Or what about this one? We all know this. You have a problem and all everybody does is give you advice. Oh, I don't like it when people call me late at night. Well, then take your phone off the hook. Okay, well, yeah, but I'm a doctor, though. I have to take, you know, I don't know what the reason is, but really, we don't like it when people always give us advice, and yet we do it to everyone else all the time. Another thing Jesus did is he asked Bartimaeus what he wanted. He didn't ask the people with him. Now, this is very significant. The disabled often feel like objects. People ask those standing next to them. There was a time when I was going to the hospital for a surgery, and they kept asking the person next to me, does he want a wheelchair? Now, first problem with that is it's my eyes that don't work, not my legs. But I kept saying, no, I don't. So Sally and I now have a ritual that we do. If anybody does that to us, the conversation goes somewhat like this. And the waitress starts, so what would he like to eat? Sally says, Ray, what would you like to eat? I say, I'd like to eat the spaghetti, please. Sally says, he'd like to eat the spaghetti, please. Waitress, well, what sauce would he like on the spaghetti? Sally, what sauce would you like on the spaghetti? Me, I'd like a marinara sauce. Sally, he'd like marinara sauce on the spaghetti. Give it about 2 minutes, and the person will just get so frustrated with how much time is being wasted that she'll start talking directly to me. All right, yeah, we're getting into this here. Life is funny. We don't need to force it. It's just already there. Listening is even more than just these things. There's the time when I was in 7 or 8. For some reason, I just remember the situation so much. I was in Sabbath school. And visiting a church, and the Sabbath school teacher put a psalm book in my lap. I'm like, what is this? Like, it's a psalm book. Yeah, but I can't see it very well. She's like, well, just try. Now, was she the one who invented the term visually challenged? Yeah, I am blind because I don't try hard enough to see. Even though I don't have any eyes in my sockets, the problem is I don't try hard enough. If I try hard enough, I grow eyes. Now, if the kid doesn't want to sing, you can't make him read the songbook anyway. What are you going to do? Sit there, this is a loaded Bible. Sing or read the songbook or you will be punished. I don't know. It doesn't work. Then there was a time when I needed, apparently somebody thought I needed assistance. And I said, no, thank you, I've got it. And I said it like 2 or 3 times. The person's friends started piping in and saying, he's got it under control, leave him alone. And she still kept pushing me. Look, do you need any help? It's just really funny. It's kind of like, okay. I mean, even the friends are telling her. The actual appropriate thing to do is to ask, excuse me, may I help you? Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, ma'am. May I help you? That's the way we've accepted it in the grocery store. And then if the person says no, then you know, unless life or property is in danger, go ahead and respect that because it's important for people to feel like they have choice in this society. Okay, so we have slow down and hear. Okay, A is aid, adapt, accommodate. I forget how I have it listed there. They all mean the same thing. Aid, I guess, is the shortest. Sometimes we do need to give some help. Now, this can be rather interesting how this works. A lot of times help can be simple things. I was evaluating a Bible software program recently and had my wife help me install it. I get done with the installation, and the first thing I see in the program is a help menu with the installation instructions. Now, for a sighted person, they would just read the manual, but a blind person would have to wait till the thing is loaded up to find out how they should have installed it. So I emailed the company and said, you know, I wonder if it would be a good idea to offer to email a blind person the first few chapters of the manual. And they said, sure, we'd be willing to do that. But it's still kind of amusing, though. You get the thing installed, and then suddenly now you know. It's like a videotape on how to hook up your VCR. Or a DVD on how to hook up your DVD player. A lot of assistance, though, is an art. And I know we say it's the thought that counts. It's the thought that counts is fine for a secret pal random mystery Christmas gift. But it doesn't always cut it. Let's say you allow someone to park your car for you in your driveway, and they accidentally hit the gas instead of the brake and drive over your prized roses and into your living room. Now, I don't care how nice the thought is, it's just not going to count in that situation. I can think of a story when I was carrying a big laundry basket with me up the stairs in the dorm at PUC. And I wedged the basket between my body and the door. You know, friction holds it there. I reached around, grabbed the door handle to open the door. It works great until someone decides they're going to do a favor for you and open the door without telling you. Well, I have very good reflexes that God has given me. So I was able to catch the basket and save all my laundry from falling on the floor and getting dirty again. But still, it's a sense of, you know, just let me know you're going to do that or ask, can I help you? Can I get the door for you? I would have said, sure, reached my hands around and properly grabbed the basket so he could get the door for me. I probably would have accepted help then if they would have asked, but instead I just opened the door. Oh, I'm getting the door for you. Oh, whoa, man, you almost caused me to lose my laundry. That's why it's always good to ask. If not, well, those kinds of things happen. Here are some basic principles and rules for dealing with different disabled people. I would say I'll do blindness first, and it's going to get the most attention for obvious reasons. I am blind. It's not that I'm belittling the other disabilities, but I know more about this one. With a blind person, first you want to ask assistance first. When you lead them, you let them take your arm at the elbow around the bicep. For those of you who are into that, around just above the elbow, and they walk behind you. Now, the cool thing is you don't have to tell them about steps or turns because you're going to hit them, and it's kind of irritating if someone's interrupting in conversation every 2 seconds. Step, turn left, unless they're going to hit the step before you do. Just move gracefully, and they'll feel your body move. Otherwise, it's like, what do you think of the weather? Well, I think it's pretty sunny. Step, although it was kind of cold, turn yesterday, and it's okay, but, you know, it does slow things down. Remember, though, please, you are now twice as wide. So when you come to a telephone pole, remember, you may walk by it, but they might not. They may be taller than you, and they may hit their head on a tree branch. When you're leading a blind person to a chair, set their hand on the back of the chair. They know the way chairs are shaped. And they will figure out where the front of the chair is and how to sit down on it just fine. Otherwise, you're bending over with them. And here's the foot of the leg of the chair. Just the back of the chair is fine. Don't just grab a blind person without notice. Trying to touch them, we live by touch. I give back rubs for a hobby. I'm used to touch. It's my language. It's no big deal. But it's nice to be notified first. Some guy grabs my tie. Oh, I'm fixing your tie. I'm like, I'm glad you told me. I was wondering if you were going to be doing a chokehold. Was it needing to test some of my self-defense training here? What's going on? Don't point. It's that way. Because it's funny, though, is I sometimes have an intuition at where they're pointing, and I'll tell, oh, you mean that way? And they're like, well, wait a minute, how did you know? Or, it's the blue one. Oh, the blue one. Okay, which one's the blue one? Describe things when you're preaching. I will demonstrate this later. If you want to get really good at describing things when preaching, listen to an old radio play or a show like Adventures in Odyssey or Unshackled or Your Story Hour. They do it really well. Okay, I'm going to take this knife and, you know, so on and so forth. And it's described as it's going on. My wife describes television programs to me. Of course, we watch ones that are most friendly to the blind. She'll describe it. Okay, he's walking across the room. He's looking through his bag. I can usually pick up the voices myself, though sometimes there's things that I'll miss. The final one for the blind, at least this type of situation, is don't play guess who. It was cute when I was 8. I'm 35 now. When someone's doing that all the time, it just loses its value. When I know your voice, I will be the first one to pipe in and say, oh, is that Jim? I did this once to a teacher. I called her up. She taught Exceptional Children, which is a class on dealing with disabilities. I called her up one evening, and just out of the blue, I said, hey, guess who? She's like, I don't know. I'm like, look, I was in your classes. You should know me. And same stuff people do to me all the time. I really don't know who you are. I'm sorry. Okay, this is Ray from your Exceptional Children class, just demonstrating what happens when people play guess who. She's like, I'll remember that in future classes I teach. I'm like, that's why I did it. You're a teacher. I knew you knew how to take it. That's why we discourage guess who, especially if the person says, I don't know your voice, please don't play guess who, then definitely listen. I have people that they'll argue with me and say, it's bad etiquette to play guess who, and they'll keep doing it. And like, one person is a lady, I finally said, well, tell you what, okay, fine, you play guess who with me, can I ask your age? Okay, I mean, you know, etiquette is a two-way street, all right? Another one is don't pet a seeing eye dog, they're on the job. And if you pet a seeing eye dog when it's on harness, it'll confuse the animal. So ask permission first. If they give you permission, then fine. But if not, then please don't. It's disruptive. Another one, of course, is have Braille on the doors in your buildings is a good idea if you can. It's not that expensive. Deafness. Don't yell. That will be like an electric guitar. Turning the volume up only increases the distortion. What you want to do is enunciate very clearly and move your lips very forthrightly and decisively so that they can read them if they're able to. Otherwise, there's always email, and internet actually is wonderful, or writing things down. Look them in the eye, especially so they can read your lips. It's important to have good lighting in the room. So if someone is preaching in a room where people are deaf and you don't have a deaf interpreter, or even if you do, you definitely need good lighting to see that. But you want to have very good lighting in the room so that the person can see. Finally, if you're using a deaf interpreter, speak to the person in the second person, not to the interpreter. What would he like to eat? No, he said, what would you like to eat? And the interpreter will say, in sign language, well, whatever, you know, whatever it is. And anyway, and then they'll say back and they'll sign you, and then they'll say, I want to eat spaghetti. And then you'll say, okay, we'll get it ready for you right now. People in wheelchairs, what you want to remember is don't lean on a wheelchair. Get your own. The wheelchair is considered part of the person's body. And if you're leaning on it, it's first of all keeping them from doing anything they want to do. And it's kind of in their personal space. So buy your own wheelchair. Try to look the person in the eye. A lot of people talk over the heads of people in wheelchairs because they're down lower. So make sure you look them in the eye. Wheelchair accessibility for buildings is always an issue. Just a few things. Have handicap accessible parking spaces. Have automatic doors. You can push a button and open them if you can. And these things are expensive. So was Calvary. And, you know, it's just good to think about. Have an elevator in your building if there's more than one story. Better yet, just have a one-story building. Ranch-style houses are still popular in this country. Have handicap-accessible stalls in the restrooms. And another one that people don't think of is it's always a good idea to have a ramp up to the platform. People in wheelchairs are going to want to lead out in service just as much as anyone else, and to have a system so they can do that. I mean, if not, okay, have the wheelchair next to the platform, a hand on the mic. It is best if they can do it the same way we do it. It may not always be possible. I know it's difficult to retrofit a building after it's already done. We understand that. Some of this may be in the future for future churches that are being built, or to do what you can with it. I really think it would be an ideal thing to start a grant program to offer churches grants to make their building handicap accessible. I think it would be a neat idea if some rich philanthropist would consider doing that. I am not in that position at this moment, so I'm simply announcing it. But if you feel like being a rich philanthropist, that's something to think about. An example of this, an example of aiding, and this actually fits with listening too. with hearing. It was when I was taking Akkadian, which is a language that Hammurabi and Sennacherib and all those guys spoke. The teacher had the textbook that he was writing his own textbook, so he just gave it to me on a disc. He let me go to the Horn Museum on campus and feel the black obelisk from the replica from the British Museum. It has some cuneiform on it. He let me feel it to see if I could recognize the letters. Unfortunately, the markings were too small, and I couldn't learn to recognize them. So instead, he accommodated me by giving me some more Hammurabi laws to be able to translate on the final exam. But he was willing to work with me. He was actually one of my most accommodating professors, Bob Bates. He was very good with me in working with me. And how do you teach a blind person Akkadian? I don't know if it's even been done before in the modern age. The classic example, though, of accommodating the disabled is the paralytic. And he had four friends. Now, think about this. He's got to get four people together. Put him on a mat. Hoist him up. All right. He's leaning to the left. No. Balance him. Okay. No, he's leaning to the right. Okay. There we go. All right. Up. Okay. Move over. All right. Now we're going to dig a hole in this guy's roof. Okay. Lower him down right in front of Jesus. Now, honestly, if four people could work together to do that back then with someone who is disabled, there's no reason why God couldn't bless somebody with the gift of setting up a van ministry for bringing disabled people to church. There's not even any lifting required. Okay, slow down, hear, and aid. All right, R is relationship. We're not just something to be helped as your pet project. We want a relationship with you. Jesus had time to spend with Bartimaeus. He talked to them, listened to him, then had him follow. It's important to think about relationships. I'd like to get to know you. Some things to help with that is don't be afraid to ask questions about a visibly obvious disability. I've lived with it for quite a while. I'm used to it. Someone will come up to me and go, can I ask you a question? Now, first of all, that is a question. So if I said no, they'd already be condemned. But second of all, I know what the question is going to be. So it's something about my blindness. But you know what? I've learned to play dumb and say, well, okay, what's your question? I'm like, well, I'm wondering, can I'm like, you know, I try to be patient because I want to challenge people to grow. Finally, they'll say, how long have you been blind? Usually it'd be, how long have you been that way? And I'm like, well, what do you mean by that way? No, I don't know. I mean, it could be something else. I don't want to presume. They could be asking me, how long has your tie been bent funny? I don't know. Probably not, but I don't know. Just be open. Ask. It's okay. I'll know you're ready to hear the answer when you do. Ask anything you want to ask as long as you're not afraid to hear the answer. Another thing is, don't be afraid to use visual metaphors when you're talking. People are like, I see what you say. Oh, I'm sorry to use the word see. I'm like, look, I'm blind. Get over it. It looks to me like you see difficulty in saying what you're saying, but I see it differently because I see it metaphorically. I consider it my mission to teach people how to see anyway. The third one under relationship is learn to have humor, be a big part of things. We're all going to do silly things. I'm going to tell one story at someone else's expense and one story at my expense to illustrate this. I was getting on an airplane once, and the flight attendant felt the need to introduce me to the rest of the people in the cabin. Now, really, it wasn't necessary, but she felt the need to and stuck her foot promptly in her mouth by saying, hi, welcome to this flight. This is Ray McAllister. He'll be with you, and he's blind today. I just said, today, and the laughter erupted around the cabin, and that was that. Okay, one at my expense was I was sitting with some people at a table, and I was talking to this lady, and for some reason, her husband wasn't saying anything, and I guess I wasn't certain where he was, so I is your husband still alive? Well, he was sitting right next to her. That's what you get for not speaking up. But we all had a good laugh about it, and it was funny. I don't know why I was thinking maybe her husband had passed away. I don't know why. I didn't see him. What I don't see doesn't exist. We're all going to do silly things. Learn to laugh about it. It makes it fun. Makes you a lot less nervous. Okay, slow down, hear, aid, relationship. And the last one is empower. Now, I have a little origami illustration here for empowerment. I can find it here. Good. Oh, nice. Nice when things work. Okay. Get this back in the bag here. Okay. This is Heidi the disabled hibiscus. Now, why is it disabled? Well, it's not really planted in the ground, is it? Just kind of plucked up at the top. You know, someone picked a flower. And so you could set this on a table and accommodate it and ate it just fine. And, well, here it is. Here's a nice little flower on laying down on the table. Flowers don't lay down on the table. Well, they don't last very long, do they? So what is it? What does this little plucked flower need? Water, maybe a little bit of dirt, sunshine, if you can do it. So what we need to do is we need to put it in a vase. Conveniently, I folded a paper vase. Just put it in here. And hopefully it will stay in okay and not... Let's see, here we go. Lock it in. Now it can stand proudly in a vase on display for everyone to see and enjoy. A nice little silver vase here. A red hibiscus with a silver vase that seems to be okay. Let's see if it stands up okay. Seems to be okay. If not, someone could just bend it. If anybody would like this afterward, you can have a paper hibiscus. That will be yours. You can put it proudly on display in your house. It will not need watering, though. But this is an example of the difference between adapting and empowering. Fleshing this out into practical terms, there are things that hinder empowerment. Empowerment is like helping somebody be able to reach their potential as much as possible. One thing is saying you can't. First of all, can't is a four-letter word, C-A-N-T. Okay, it is a four-letter word, and people use it like one. I had one teacher in high school. She finally learned not to say can't after I started jumping off the top of the houseboat and water skiing, and we were on a water ski trip. After that, she's kind of like, okay, all right, fine, okay, you can do it. Okay, fine, do it. But many people were stopped at the level of people not even giving them a chance to try and fail. If I'm given space, I'll succeed by God's power. Another one is using the disability as a handle. What I mean is, one time I went into the hairdresser and I heard someone say, oh, the blind guy's here. So I went over to them and said, oh, hi, I'm the blind guy. But let's be fair. If the hairdresser had said, hey, the black lady's here, how'd that have been taken? Probably not very well. All right? We don't use someone's disability as a handle unless it's the only way in a life and death emergency to say, there's a blind man trapped under the rubble. Yeah, probably a good idea to do that in a life-threatening emergency, but getting a haircut is generally not a life-threatening emergency, although some of you I know might disagree. I realize that, was it President Bush Sr. stopped a whole bunch of people of getting a haircut while getting on Air Force One? It was a big mess, but really getting a haircut is not a life-threatening emergency. The other one is the issue of bullying, mocking, or what I now call peer abuse. This is a major obstacle to empowerment. I can think when I was in eighth grade, students figured that since I couldn't use the combination locks in the lockers, I had to set my pants for PE up on top of the other lockers and then dress down in the shorts. They would hide my pants during PE. Now, I don't know what of our church doctrine says you hide a blind person's pants. It doesn't say it. In fact, what I see in the Bible is, cursed be the man who leads the blind astray out of the path. That's what the Bible says. But anyway, some people don't know yet. God is forgiving, but it's still a sin to take advantage of people who are disabled. Now, I know that the difference between having fun and being mean, I think we need to learn to listen. If a blind person, if I tell jokes about myself or about blindness, then it's probably okay to jest a little bit and tease a little bit. But there comes a point, and I will usually have people know, look, I need to just go ahead and get on with things. Things that go on too long are generally a problem. We don't want to hurt people. It's okay to have fun. We don't want to do any more than that. And a lot of things that are harmful happen in school, and people have scars on them the rest of their lives. You really need to be careful about this. I mean, one, the most painful thing someone ever told me I can think of in school, other than saying they liked me when they were just joking and telling that to the whole class the next day, But as far as honest statements, if someone said they wish I just went to one of those blind schools, then it wouldn't be such a burden on people. Apparently, she did not understand the importance of empowerment. What you do is so I'm not a burden, just put me to work. Have me help out. Well, I was playing electronic drum machine for Vespers in high school, and so I was doing my part some, helping out as best I could. But empowerment involves putting someone to work to be useful. I ended up learning not to trust. We did a trust fall in eighth grade. I fell back. The rest of the class caught me with no problem. In 12th grade, same group of kids, I couldn't do it. I'd gone bungee jumping 6 months earlier, but I couldn't do the trust fall. I trusted them intellectually, but I didn't want to be that close to them. They'd hurt me too much. This is reality. Empowerment, I would say, would mean visiting someone who is disabled and asking them, hey, is there anything that you'd like to do to help out the church? And really find out, because what they do may not be one of the standard things for worship. Maybe there's someone who doesn't sing well. Maybe they're deaf. Maybe they paint. Maybe they could present a painting that would relate to a sermon that someone's preaching and then have a number of their other paintings in the foyer on display afterward. Why not? Encourage the person to use their gifts. Maybe someone is blind, but they're a poet. Maybe they don't sing, or they write good poetry. Have them illustrate one of your sermons with a poem, or just have them present a poem in lieu of a special music, or just before a special music. Think creatively. Think outside the box. The disabled are already outside the box anyway, so if you don't think outside the box, we're excluding them. Job 29:15 says that he was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. Now notice that eyes to the blind, that's not just throwing food to somebody. It's being for them what they lack. To be someone's eyes means you're seeing for them. You're not thinking for them, you're seeing for them. And the other thing, what does Jesus say? Whatever you do to the least of these, you do it unto him. That means that if our church is not reaching out to the disabled, we're not letting Jesus inside. Because he is the least of these, isn't he? If that's the situation. Of course, it also means that someone who is disabled, whatever they've done to me, they've done to Jesus. And they did. They blindfolded him and beat him and said, who hit you? So yeah, they teased Jesus as well. That puts it in perspective as well when our kids are mean to disabled people at school. They were mean to Jesus, and I don't know if we want to go down that road. Of encouraging kids to do things that they did at Jesus' crucifixion. That's I don't know, that's uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable. Finally, I'd like us to think about the idea of the body of Christ. The body of Christ in 1 Corinthians 12 is a group of people that all have different gifts. And because of that, we all need to work together. And what is it that 1 Corinthians 12 says that we have different gifts, and some people that seem like they're less important are still important gifts. And then what does it say? When one suffers, we all suffer. So then, if one member of the body is disabled, isn't the whole body disabled? Isn't the whole body of Christ disabled? And the only solution to the problem is for us to learn to stand in unity and help each other. Okay, that was just turning the computer back on, getting off standby for the closing hymn. I'd like to share a poem that I wrote in closing that illustrates this idea of unity in the body of Christ. And it summarizes this whole idea of basically of share, which in some ways was the song that Sally shared with us. The idea of slow down, hear, adapt, relationship, and empower. And the poem is called A Prayer for Healing. And let me just set this up here. Okay. A Prayer for Healing. I am the hand that is withered and sore, the eye that does not always see clearly. I am the foot that is bent to the side, the tongue that stammers and struggles for speech. I am the heart daily broken by sorrow and care. I am weak, but God is strong. I have a place, a purpose, a life, a chance to fulfill the passion of my Creator. For we are one body with one blood in our veins. We have one spirit and one head, even Christ. For the Lord of love, who is no respecter of persons, gives to all the joy of his work. For not even the strong are strong by themselves. I see the church as a bride on her day of marriage, but lying in a bed of sickness, for shame and confusion about her broken members keeps her from rising in spite of them, in thanks for them. And so she wastes away, soon to become herself as weak. Heal us, O Lord, and we shall be healed. Save us, and we shall be saved, for you are our praise, our delight. And if we would learn to move in unity, we would get up, step, leap into paradise. And you know what? Jesus demonstrated the share model with us. We were stuck in sin, and he, the eternal great I am, slowed down to enter our limited existence. He heard our cry when we said that we're suffering in sin. He adapted to us by going to the cross. You know, I can't think of any more accommodation than dying on a cross for a world. And he wants a relationship with us so that we can be together with him. And he wants to empower us to succeed so that we can be with immortal lives again in heaven to live forever. So he did it for us. It was good enough for him. It's good enough for us. And that is our call.